Welcome to an all-new episode of the McFuture Podcast. I'm Steve Factor. Let's jump right in. Amazing show for you today. There's so many cancellations, at least the ones that are visible to us publicly, that I decided to make a special segment called Canceled. By the way, whenever you put an exclamation point at the end of something, you have to yell it out because otherwise it doesn't count. All other times in grammar, you put a period, but use an exclamation point. I'm sorry, you're going to have to yell. Even if it's in the middle of the night and you're writing it, you just have to yell, even if it wakes up your spouse and you get a beating. And by the way, if you are getting a beating, you should probably get out of an abusive relationship. Okay, let's get into it. So the New York Times would do these tours of different places for rich kids. So they would charge like $5,000 and they would have their reporters essentially babysit a bunch of kids for money. So you didn't know New York Times did that, did you? Well, apparently that's the case. So a bunch of these rich kids are on this trip and one of the reporters, who is one of these cranky old reporters, his last name is McNeil, he was sitting with one of the rich kids and they were talking about the use of the N-word as one does with rich kids. I guess kids have questions, but I guess in the process of answering the question about the appropriateness of the use of the word, and this was the way I understand it was some sort of technical discussion about when to use it, when it's wrong, the philosophical aspects of it. It wasn't directed at anybody as a slur. And in explaining this concept, whatever the answer was, he used the word. We all know not to use this word, clearly. But he did. But he didn't direct it at anyone. He used it as a, in part of his description. Now, it's unclear from the write-up whether she was the one who ratted on him or the other kids did. And there was an internal investigation at the New York Times. And I think the union intervened as well. And they decided there's nothing here. The guy obviously said it in a contextualized way where he was trying to explain something. Shouldn't have said it. He got a slap on the wrist and everyone went on. You would think, oh no, that's not what happened. What happened afterwards was all of the New York Times woke reporters basically signed a petition to get this guy fired. So they essentially reopened this case and they claimed it was the craziest thing. I don't remember the exact terminology, but they said something like, you know, they feel unsafe that they're being, you know, attacked. This is a 65-year-old guy. he's one of these probably cranky reporters who, you know, has seen it all, done it all. Anyway, the Times kicked him out on the curb. A logical person would say, well, what happened? This is like a internal lynch mob. And the New York Times has been known to do this. There's another reporter, Barry Weiss. She also had this kind of stuff go on. So apparently there were all these groups inside the company. They use Slack internally for communication. And they created entire groups against her where they would write stuff like, oh, is she writing about Israel again? So it's this crazy woke cult growing inside of the New York Times. And I'm sure there are people who just want to keep their job. So when that petition shows up, they're like, hey, I better sign this thing because they're going to go after me next. And realistically, they are going to go after you next because there is nothing you can do that will appease a mob. And that's what this is. And people are thinking, well, you know, it's unfair, it's unjust. I think we need to back up a little bit and understand what's happening. This is a substitution where people in these positions finally see that they have a certain power that they can exert, and they can exert it against people they don't like, and they can get them fired and replace them with sympathizers, people who agree with them. So this is a mechanism for substitution. That's what cancellation is. Cancellation was never about, oh, I believe in these principles. Yeah, on some level, they believe in these principles, but also they are in a cult and they want other cult members to be in the jobs that are currently occupied by non-cult members. So that is the process that's going on, and it's coming to your job. It's just happening to take residence in the media field right now and at the New York Times and a bunch of these other places. But it's coming. It's coming for your job. It's coming for everybody's job, because if you allow mobs and mob mentality and the absence of context to rule, then everyone is guilty of something. And with enough motivation, someone will try to get rid of you, because now we've given them the tools. So keep that in mind as things continue down this path. And I think it's a very dangerous one, because we've empowered mobs and not common sense. And a lot of these young reporters and young workers fresh from universities where they were protesting all kinds of stuff, where they're protesting on behalf of groups they've never even met because they grew up so rich, because they can afford $5,000 to have a reporter babysit them, a reporter from the New York Times. So that's where we are. We're at the mercy of rich children. If that's a world you like, hey, carry on. Intent is a subject even children understand. Did Bobby mean to do it when he hit you? You know, that's the first thing a kindergarten teacher will ask. And then they say, I'm sorry, and everyone moves on with their lives. There is no more I'm sorry. Sorries are no good anymore. They're no good, because the goal is to replace you. The goal is not to get the apology. The apology is irrelevant. They want your job. They don't want your apology. There's just such a deep cynicism in all of this, and such a dishonesty to this dialogue, because no one is really looking at context or intent. They're looking for a reason. And we've created a mechanism to give them lots of reasons. And there will be reasons for anything. So if someone doesn't like you in any capacity, whether it's public or inside of a corporation, these are the tools. And even on Twitter, especially on Twitter, there's this malevolence that it attracts. I think part of it is because of the types of people that are on there, but also just the nature of the anonymity and the fact that it's so impersonal. It's just a little avatar of a stranger you've never met, and someone who you have no obligations to, you don't know their family, you feel like you can hurl all kinds of insults at them. And so what you do is you presume the worst in anything they say. You also purposely misread or ignore context. You want to win that argument. So it doesn't matter if there's a good explanation or if there's nuance there. They're not interested in the nuance. They're interested in the victory. Your suffering is their victory, because they don't feel good about themselves. But standing atop on top of your head until you drown, that gives them some sense of success. I don't know, fulfillment. I don't understand wanting to be this kind of person. And finally, people will actively manufacture falsehoods. Just this idea that you're going to say you feel threatened by this 65-year-old crank who's going to retire in a couple of years, that's who you feel threatened by? That's how I know you're lying. You're a liar. You're a soulless, unprincipled liar if you're going to turn to me and say, oh, this old fart that needs the money to shepherd around rich kids, that guy is violent or a threat to you. Unfortunately, the courage to stand up to this has been outsourced, because the way this works right now, at least online, is someone will say something batshit crazy, like, oh, I'm afraid of a 65-year-old man who sits in a cubicle. You know, so they'll say something like that. And then every person who disagrees with that knows to stay quiet. They know if they make a peep or internally, if they don't sign that petition, that same craziness is coming for them. So they sign the petition and they dummy up and they stare at the wall. They go back to typing. And then the crazy kamikazes jump in. Now, these are the people who are in media who are probably way more extreme than most of us. Like, these are people who decided to put their lives out there to the public. People all the way on the right. Typically, it's been people on the right. And they're people who don't represent a lot of what sane people or people in the middle believe, but those people are quiet. So the only ones speaking are insane. They're kamikazes. These are people who've basically set fire to their careers because they know that now people want to camp in front of their houses, threaten their kids, send them death threats. They're going to get criticism constantly from people. They're going to get yelled at restaurants. They're going to get spit on. Like, that's an insane choice. This is an insane choice, even what I'm saying, because even though I feel like I'm sort of straddling that middle, there is no middle anymore, because once you go against one side or the other, you are now targeted, and now you're targeted by both if you try to even sound sensible. It's so easy to make the kamikazes look crazy too, that the first crazy wins because they have a mob on their side. So all of those things get codified into policies and rules and laws. In this environment, our best people are silent. The people who have the best ideas, the best solutions, the best insights, they're not going to speak up in this environment. They have kids, they have families, they have 401k plans, they have vesting schedules for their jobs. They're not going to say a word. So we're not hearing from our best and brightest, because in this environment, it's so toxic, it's so destructive, it's so personally destructive to people, and jobs are at risk, that they're never gonna say anything. But you know what? There's no other choice. Until normal people start standing up for themselves and standing up to the stupidity, and even whether it's left, right, I don't even think that's a proper distinction. I think it's more common sense versus insanity, maybe more incumbents versus challengers. I don't know. The dynamic isn't really clearly left and right, but I think just to process all of this, that's how we're doing it. I don't think it's the right thing. But anyway, this doesn't change until normal people, sane people start speaking up. And we should, even in cases where we disagree. You're not a hero if you stand up for something you already believe in. But you are a hero if you stand up for the right of someone else to say the things that you don't believe in. That's what makes you a hero. This guy, Matt Stoller, who is an author, and he posts some good things. He's a very lefty guy, but I follow kind of a range of people. And he says that the answer to bad speech is more speech has always been kind of stupid. No one says the answer to fraud is more fraud, even though fraud is at least in part a form of speech. Okay, this is a really stupid thing to say for a very smart guy. Yes, the answer to bad speech is more speech, but the answer to libel, slander, incitement of violence, fraud, all of these things, we have laws on the books. Those things are illegal. We have plenty of lawyers and plenty of mechanisms in the legal system to go after those people. So you don't have to worry about speech that is slanderous or libelous or fraudulent, because those things are already covered in our laws. So what you have to only worry about is speech you disagree with. And at some point, people in power will disagree with speech that you like. That's why you need to defend the stuff you don't like. It's very simple. I keep repeating it, but it's really annoying to me that we are still not internalizing these very basic concepts. The other part of cancel culture that we don't talk about is, I don't think it was ever about silencing dissent or canceling certain individuals. Maybe it was, you know, for the underlings, the useful idiots who, you know, pile in and start, you know, tweeting against someone or trying to get them fired. Those people I don't really care about. It's the people that know what they're doing and have ambitions and interests in gaining power. Those are the people that I worry about, because they know this is really about soft cancellations. That's much more effective than just having to fire everyone who misspeaks or does something you disagree with. What you end up doing is, if you have enough public examples of that happening, people shut up on their own. because you have now instilled fear in them. Fear of losing their jobs, fear of losing their lives maybe, fear of public scorn, being shunned by their friends and family. That's what this is about. This is a fear business. And if we just shut up and go along, we could live nice little Stepford lives as long as we don't question anything, as long as we stay silent. And now there's an incentive for silence, fear. That is what's happening. The ironic thing is a lot of the people who are most active in this seem to be anti-corporate, anti-business, but what they've effectively done is give corporations an extra lever to fire people with. So they think it's just going to be people they don't like. But once that lever exists, you can pull it for any reason. So you can find something about somebody always and use that as pretext to fire them. So you've just created this nice, convenient little mechanism for big institutions to use against the little guy. Hope you're proud of yourselves, working class heroes. There was some research in August at Facebook that showed 70% of the most active groups were considered too toxic to recommend to users. So, you know, Facebook's trying to get people to use groups under the premise that, oh, we won't watch you. You can say anything you want in your group. It's private. Your group is private. I mean, you click that little button. It says private. I mean, why would we look at a private group or your messages? We'd never do that. That'd be crazy. And, you know, and so even they found that 70% of the most active groups are cuckoo. That's not surprising because people with the passion to organize around anything are also the craziest people. People who write letters to CEOs, I mean, sitting down and writing letter, handwritten, or even if you're typing it out, that's a person who is going to take things to their final destination. They're going to see things through. So they're committed. And in a way, you have to treat the squeaky wheel. It needs grease. And so we are getting a whole lot of grease everywhere. It's grease lightning out there. Yeah, these are the people who are crazy enough to create problems, the people who are so engaged in any particular subject. These are the tribes. These are the religions. I've talked about it in previous episodes. And when you talk about banning, whether it's banning Trump from all the social media platforms or any other individual, I'm not necessarily against the banning. What I'm against is the lack of transparency, the lack of process or due process. And to me, method is principle. How you do things is oftentimes more important than the thing you do. A good example is, when you do math exams. Or when you interview for jobs in consulting or a bunch of other fields, in tech fields, they ask you questions and you're supposed to answer them and you are to show your work. Because even if you arrive at the wrong answer, they want to know your thought process. How you think is important. If you happen to go astray in, one of eight steps in your answer, that's okay, because those seven steps, if they're good, the employer will take a risk on you. Or your math teacher might give you partial credit because you kind of screwed up somewhere and maybe you, displaced the one or didn't carry the two or whatever it is. Show us the work and show us the way for people who didn't do anything illegal to come back, if they adhere to certain rules or principles. But that lack of transparency, that's a serious problem. And there's a guy who's a conservative, he's kind of like, he almost hosts like a late night show on YouTube, but from a conservative perspective, his name is Steven Crowder. He's now suing Facebook because he, I think, had the most popular election day stream on Facebook, and they just cut it off without giving him a reason, without any explanation. He, I think, had at some point 1.3 million people watching, and they just decided to go, hey, we're cutting this off. So I would suspect it's ideological, but a lot of that is going to have to come out in court. And who knows what you can prove, because these algorithms and these choices that they make, they're just presses of a button. And whenever you have that kind of disparity between who is controlling things and who is being controlled, that transparency becomes so much more important. You need an audit function, and we have no audit function. You have no clue if your Facebook ads had any effect, or how many clicks or how many likes. Are those likes real? Are they BS? You have no idea. You have no idea. We know nothing about what goes on in that black box of Facebook or YouTube or Twitter. It's kind of ironic that two analyses kind of point to where the guilt is, but none of the accountability. So one analysis of Facebook posts showed that Facebook actually accelerated the insurrectionists, or all these people that were plotting to march on the Capitol, or, you know, attack, I don't know, podiums, whatever these mutants did. But the funny thing is that all of this was done on Facebook. So Facebook's algorithm, it sees as more people engage with it, they show it to more and more people. Then there was a second analysis of 200 arrests from that day, from January 6th. And what they found was that the vast majority of the planning was done on Facebook, YouTube, and I forget what the third network. I think it was Twitter, but don't hold me to that. The funny thing is that Facebook and all these other networks had no accountability, no punishment, but Parler disappeared. They got cut off completely. Now, on the surface, you're like, well, of course, this is where all the trolls live. This is where all the right wingers went. This is where, you know, all of this must be happening. No, I think they found that only 6 of the people arrested were plotting things on Parler, but something like, you know, 35, 40, or 50 were on the other networks. And there was no punishment. So Parler, they got kicked off of iOS and Apple's App Store. They got kicked off of Google's App Store. They got kicked off of Amazon hosting. So they were disappeared instantaneously. All their accounts were cut off. All their social accounts were cut off. And these guys basically lost even all of their data. And, you know, that's interesting considering that the planning was actually done on those other networks. It just goes to show you what this battle is. It's not a battle of left and right. It's a battle of incumbents versus upstarts. And yes, sometimes these upstarts are really unsavory. I don't know if you've seen the other one, Gab. I haven't seen Parler because they ask for your phone number. I was going to check it out, but I'm not giving them my phone number. Who knows what these creeps are up to? And I looked at Gab once. I'm like, oh my God. It's like if you took all the trolls off of Twitter and put them on another network. It's horrible, but not necessarily illegal. So we can finally see this malevolent cynicism behind saying, hey, if you don't like it, start your own. Well, you can't. These guys did that. They're like, hey, we're going to take all the trolls with us and we're going to put them on Parler or Gab or all this other stuff. But what they didn't count on is you can't just build a social network. You now have to build a mobile operating system because iOS and Android are going to kick you off. Same thing with hosting. Amazon Web Services isn't going to host you. You have to build your own payment processing and credit cards because people aren't going to be able to pay with their credit cards because all of the companies will say, MasterCard and PayPal and all these other guys say, oh no, we're not going to process their payments. And same thing with DNS companies, or Cloudflare threw a bunch of people off. So you're not just building a business, you're building every business that it depends on. It's like, imagine you used to go to a restaurant and at some point that restaurant says, you know what? We don't want your business. You're like, hey, I love the steak here. It is delicious. I would like to continue dining here. And the restaurant goes, I'm sorry, if you're interested in steak, you're going to have to start your own steakhouse. So you open your own steakhouse, but then they go, oh no, we're kicking you off the land because the real estate company, they don't want you here. And we're cutting off the electricity because we control the electricity and the electric company listens to the other steakhouse. And if you want telephone service, you can't have that either. And the website for your restaurant and the delivery sites like Grubhub, they're going to cut you off too. So now you technically could have a restaurant, but you also have to own the property, own the electric generators. You have to own some sort of, you know, satellite phone business, because that's the only way you're going to be able to operate. So you start to see the cynicism of this. And none of what I'm saying applies to illegal things. If people are doing illegal things, if networks are found to be doing illegal things, they should be prosecuted 100%. But if they're not, yes, on some level, you have freedom of association. But also, we have businesses that are getting so big and so powerful and so, you know, omnipresent that you almost have to guarantee people the right to use them, even if you don't like it. And this exists with telephone companies. They're called common carriers. And common carriers can't deny you service, or Verizon or AT&T can't say, hey, we can't give you service because we don't like what you're saying on your phone conversations. And they can hear your phone conversations. The FBI has offices in all of those companies, and they tap all of the phones. So if they wanted to really decide who doesn't get phone service, they could, but they don't and they can't. You know, this is the world we've crafted, and I just can't see this as a good place. On some level, if you believe in utopia, and I'm trying to see the other side. The other side is, these are unsavory characters. And I agree. These are unsavory characters. You would not want to invite most of these trolls to your house. You know, I actually see the good in not having them. So if someone said, hey, these people could never be invited to another cocktail party ever again, I can see the utopianism in that, saying, hey, we're going to have a high quality crowd almost anywhere we go. But what happens when no one can ever go to a party? You're not going to like that last party that they throw. It's going to be a really explosive, shitty one. Short of illegality, we got to let people party. And right now, there's some very powerful platforms that have duopoly power, like on mobile, that can basically kick you off. And it'll become more of a problem as we see the squelching of other independent voices. I'm not a big fan of going off to alternative networks. You are basically banishing yourself for no reason. Even the existence of Parler is kind of stupid. I think people who are being banned or canceled, whatever, they should be fighting for their right to be on the existing networks, not creating an irrelevant one somewhere else. The reason Facebook matters, the reason Twitter matters, is because all the tastemakers are on there. The politicians are on there. The celebrities, the entertainers, people who matter are on there. If you banish yourself where you're just talking to other trolls and are never engaging in the larger conversation that's driving society, what's the point? That is the dumbest thing ever. So I'm not a fan of this self-banishment. But yeah, you should probably self-regulate a little bit, and we should find a way for all these people to participate. And maybe that's making real identities a requirement, so you can't hide behind some avatar. I don't know. There's a number of different solutions. I laid out a whole bunch of solutions in what was the episode called? How Sex Saves Free Speech. Check that out. I laid it out, and I'm sure the how is not the hard part. It's the will to do it and the ability to make incumbents surrender that power to allow independent voices on there when they don't have to. And it's kind of weirdly fitting and kind of ironic that the only authority powerful enough to oust the president of the United States was not the Congress, was not impeachment. It was not the people overthrowing a dictator. It was a private corporation. It was social media. Twitter kicked him off. Facebook kicked him off and silenced him. The guy disappeared. Digital silence is silence. And no one's been more silent than Donald Trump. And a lot of people are like, man, I am loving the silence. This is amazing. And I get that because he is an agent of chaos. He will disturb a lot of people. He will get people who love him all riled up and people who hate him all riled up. And everyone is just at each other's throats. And it's been nice to have like a, you know, kind of a boring president. The point is where the power lies. It is not with the politicians. It's with supranational corporations that control who gets to speak and how people are not waking up. This is driving me insane. And whether we like it or not, Trump was our first Twitter president. He probably wouldn't have been president if not for having Twitter and having that direct ability to communicate. But what I know for sure is the next social media president will be cut off by social networks if he or she does not play the game, because they've shown that they can do it. And once they show that they can do it, oh boy, people learn lessons. Immediately after they did this, all these other countries, was it Zimbabwe or Nigeria? One of those countries, there was an election and they said, all right, no social media. It's banned. And the social media companies were like, well, how dare you? You know, it's people's right to speak. And they're like, well, we don't want you because you've just shown us that this can be done. This little spigot. It turns out there's a switch. Everyone found the switch. And now that switch will be used. And it is going to be super entertaining for me because I've been talking about this for a long time. It will not be as entertaining for others who will now be putting up with the consequences. But those companies, one way or another, will decide that presidency, either by boosting the signal of people they like or by degrading the signal or eliminating it, shutting it off for people they don't like, especially ones that are as polarizing as Trump was. And it was kind of funny to me to see all these VCs making these bold proclamations that they will never work with anyone in the Trump administration. And, you know, especially after he was cut off because it sort of emboldened them. And they were like, oh, you know, now we're definitely taking a stand. And what's funny is all of their funds have huge amounts of Saudi Arabian money, Chinese money. Their companies rely on it. And you will never, ever hear them say a peep about the Uyghurs that are being shoveled into re-education camps and people who are being forced, women who are being forced into abortions. You will not hear a peep as China's market grows. I've said this before. We are going to have to answer to it. And the way we answer to it is by giving in, because the corporations and the VCs will feel emboldened to speak out against stuff here. They will never speak out against gigantic crimes by their customers and financiers. And same thing applies to big corporations. There was a recent example even. A Zoom executive worked with the Chinese government to disrupt video calls that discussed Tiananmen Square because they monitor all of the communications there. And one dissident said he, quote, was working for the government as an agent of persecution. This is what's happening out there. They have to play by their rules, just like we expect companies to play by our rules. But you wouldn't want to live under their rules. And increasingly, their rules are being exported here through the companies. There are really two main ways to avoid falling to demagogues or to corruption. The first is let everybody speak and win with better ideas. The second is to silence the outliers. The first one, unfortunately, can't guarantee that the best ideas will win. But the second one absolutely guarantees that corruption wins, because silencing, you have to do it thoroughly, frequently, and oppressively in order to make sure it sticks. And if you think you hate the society where your enemies get to speak freely, just wait till you see the one where they can't. Is political speech a civil right? And if it is, then you should be able to be protected by the law, because kicking you off would be a violation of your civil right. And I'm warming up to this argument. I think it's an interesting one, and it's one that should be tested in courts. There's another way that I thought was interesting to position free speech. It's basically saying you want net neutrality for social media users. And this is from Will Chamberlain, a really smart guy. He's a lawyer, conservative guy. He says, big tech didn't want to be discriminated against by ISPs. Conservatives don't want to be discriminated against by big tech. That kind of makes sense to me. There's another way to look at what's happening, which is social media and these online communication tools, are they utilities? Common carriers like Verizon, they can't discriminate against things we say. So they're obligated to provide service to people they dislike. I think that needs to be extended to these other services. And I know that's controversial, but it's something that really needs to be part of a larger conversation, which is a bill of rights for online services. We've had a bill of rights and we've tried to stretch it into the digital world and it will not go because a lot of our rules just didn't envision this new world and this type of communication. What rights do we have online? What services can we keep without worrying about being kicked off? And honestly, we're going to need to revisit employment law too in terms of what gets you kicked off online. Anyway, these are all things that need to be decided. There is a novelist, Padma Venkatraman, I don't know how to pronounce it exactly. She said, reading Shakespeare, quote, risks sending a subliminal message that academic excellence outweighs hateful rhetoric. Apparently there's hateful rhetoric in Shakespeare. I know a lot of people die and commit suicide and all that, but that is also every show on Netflix and on HBO. So an English teacher brags, quote, very proud to say we got the Odyssey removed from the curriculum this year. This is what's going on. There's virtual book burnings going on and our educators are celebrating it. So instead of doing your job and going through a difficult text that may have murder and rape and conquest and war, all the things that are basically in the Bible, instead of going through these texts and teaching the students, getting them to think critically about this, understanding the philosophy and the morality behind it, they're just banning it. They're just banning it. These are beyond morons. They're now malicious. It's one thing if you make that decision for yourself because you're not that bright. Great. Don't read Shakespeare. Don't read Homer's Odyssey. Don't do any of those things. That's perfectly fine with me. But once you're in a position where you are influencing young minds, your job is to teach, not to ban. And you're supposed to be a shepherd for developing critical thinking. But how can you be a vessel when you don't have any critical thinking of your own? We've got a personnel problem as well as a cancellation problem. That's it for this episode. Thanks for watching. Don't forget, share it with others. Review the show on iTunes and other platforms and subscribe. Also, sign up for the Patreon if you enjoy the show and want to support it and get tons of awesome exclusives. Go to patreon.com/McFuture. That's it. I will see you next time on the McFuture.